continue a discussion that we began last week. We pointed out that there are, as far as the relationship that people see between individuals and families and churches and governments, there are a lot of different theories. We focused on three: what the individual Christian is authorized to do, the church is authorized to do by virtue of the fact that the church is made up of individual Christians. And then there's a second theory that I too have rejected. It's what the church is not authorized to do, the individual Christian is not authorized to do. I take a different view. My view is that what the individual Christian is authorized to do, or sometimes required to do as an individual, the church as such is not authorized to do that. I see a difference between the church and the individual. Now, the individual Christian is a part of a lot of different systems. The individual Christian is a part of the church. We talked about that last week. He's a part of the community. He's a part of business, perhaps. He is a part of the home. He's a part of the government. And as Bob pointed out last week, and I didn't get my chart changed to reflect this, the individual Christian also has a relationship with the just the world around him, the planet. And so in each of those spheres, the relation or the individual Christian is given some responsibilities. We'll talk a little bit about the relationship that the individual Christian has to the church last week. Tonight, I want to extend that, and I would like to talk about the other relationships. And it may be that we won't get through all of these relationships tonight. I thought we would get farther than we did last week, but that's okay. It takes time to reflect on some of these things. So let's talk about the individual Christian and the relationship that the individual Christian has to community. Now, because the individual Christian has a relationship to community, that doesn't argue that the church has a relationship into community. It's a different kind of relationship, and you can't. I'm fond of saying you can't make a skip pass here. That's because I was a basketball coach, and I know that sometimes a guard tries to make a pass across the defense and skip over some steps, and it just almost never works in basketball, and it's not going to work in our relationship with individual Christians and the ecosystems that he's a part of. So let's talk about the individual Christian and their relationship to community. Can I get somebody to read 1 Peter 2 and verse 12? And if you want to read more than just that one verse, that's the one that we're going to focus on. But if you want to read more than that, feel free to read a little bit more than the paragraph really starts in verse 11. As I see it, and continues through verse 12. So if you want to read 11 and 12, that would be fine.
Dear friends, I urge you as aliens and strangers in the world to abstain from sinful desires which war against your soul. Live such good lives among the pagans that though they accuse you of doing wrong, they may see your good deeds and glorify God on the day he visits us.
Okay. Any comments, any thoughts about this? We were talking about something related to this. We were discussing it from the book of James. And Priscilla made a really interesting comment in our class. She said she had been talking to one of her friends, and her friend said, I can tell you're a Christian because of the things that you do. I'm just surprised that you're so nice. And that's a really telling kind of observation that sometimes people make about Christians in their relationship to community. Any thoughts? Yeah, Carol.
Well, on the in mine on verse 2, it says so that in the things through which they slander you as an evildoer, many times somebody will say something that you said, you know, either taking it another direction than what you were saying. And so long as you remember that what you said, you can't help what they decide to say or how they take what you said, and if they're evildoers. So it helps you be strong in not getting upset.
Okay.
Because that's one of the things that's really, really tough for people to do is to, well, I didn't say that. Well, all of a sudden you're upset, you know. And Jesus is the example. He didn't do that when people said stuff.
Sure. People twisted Jesus' words.
Yeah.
And people will twist your words. But it's incumbent upon us as Christians not to put it out there. And you know, sometimes we say things that are unkind. And we shouldn't be doing that.
Yeah, but if we say something that's unkind, then that's our problem. And then we have to take care of that. But I'm talking about saying something, and they're slandering you. They're doing like with Paul. He's feeble. He writes good, but he can't speak or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know that that's not true. So it helps you not be upset.
That's absolutely true. And you know what they said about Paul? That was within the church. This we're talking about going beyond that community to the community at large, and the opportunity or the probability that you will be slandered in the community at large, or that what you say will be misconstrued, is greater in the community at large. And maybe that means that we have to have more carefulness about what we say.
I don't know if I would say it that way. It's most of you know I live across the street, and the gentleman who lived in the house, which is no longer there, my mother had talked to him, and because somebody had talked to him about the fact that we don't have an organ, he had told my mother that we don't believe in music. Okay, so it goes through the vine. It's not that anybody says anything wrong, but the filter that somebody else did goes that way, and it's like, you know, I was blown away, you know, when I walked in here. My mother goes, "You want to go over there? They don't believe in music." Well, it was quite a treat.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
I just think we have to be very careful when we're out in public because people are watching.
They are
always watching. And some people are watching and give you a compliment, and other people are watching and they want to trip you up. And it's sad but we have to be very, very careful.
Yeah. Yeah. Peter says they think it's strange that you run not with them to the same excess of riot, speaking evil of you. Because you don't go out on Friday night and get just pie-faced drunk, they think you're strange.
Yeah. Or don't lose, if you don't use foul language, they think you're strange, you know.
Right. Yeah. And I have to say, in our culture today, if you get married, they think it's strange that you're just not living together.
Yeah.
Well, when I had my knee surgery or my hip, whichever one. And the lady asked us how long we'd been married, and I can't remember. It was in 2012 or 2014, so I don't. Anyway, we told her, and she said, "Oh, you must like each other." we both said, well, yeah, we do.
That's true. You know, it's a sad commentary that we look so different, but that we can't escape the fact that we look different, but we don't need to be mean about the difference. Yeah, and I remember when my kids were going to school, it was not uncommon for them to have friends their age who had divorced parents.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But now I think it's also almost common, uncommon to find a class in an elementary school where the parents have stayed married. It's just, we're dealing with a culture that's very ungodly, and we have to accept it.
Yeah.
Yeah, Bill.
Something from Proverbs that I just read last night that speaks to this. Forsake not your friend or your father's friend. Now, I remember when I was young, and I was first acting as a young adult, the businesses that I needed that my father patronized and the people that ran them, I patronized them. They were family friends, and by extension, their family was too. And that's part of community. People are joined together even though they aren't religiously joined or joined by blood.
Well, that's true. That's true. And we have to remember that. So that's why the Apostle Paul makes the statement about elders. He says they have a good report of them without.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we treat people honestly. They may slander you, but you still treat people honestly. So, yeah, it's a good point.
You know, there's something else, too, that I think a lot of us don't realize. I've got my 60th high school reunion coming up this year, and we meet once a year or once every 5 years, and we see those that are still alive that are there. And we touch each other live. We came from something we all have in common way back when. And we said things to each other generally in kindness because we're glad to see somebody else is still alive. You know, and our relationships with each other have changed from the high school cliques and stuff to adults where we actually care about each other now.
Yeah, sure.
And it isn't just a social thing. And those things matter, you know, keeping connections with people over the years.
Yes, it does.
And the fact that I'm not afraid of my Christianity. If I say something about it, I'm not ashamed of it.
That's good.
And we shouldn't be ashamed. We should be willing to say, yes, I'm a disciple of God. Mm-hmm. I'm a disciple of Christ. Yeah, Carol.
If you say or quote scripture and say, Jesus says, if you love me, you'll keep my commandments. And if you don't, you're not my disciples, basically. And if they jump to the conclusion that you mean you're saying I'm going to go to hell because I don't believe, if they won't listen to anything else that you say, you still have to say stand firm with what Jesus said. So you may be misinterpreted, but you've done the best that you can. You didn't go around and walk up to somebody and say you're going to go to hell, but that's the way that they took it.
Well, yeah. that's true. That's undeniable. Yeah, Kim.
These verses are really some that I went to a lot when I was working. Because of the job that I had and the way that I interacted with people, if I would do something kind and nice for them, especially during contract negotiation times, labor contract negotiations and all of that, because I was the negotiator for the management team, people would accuse me of trying to be nice in order to get something from them, in order to, you know, to, and just, and twisted my motives. And that was very difficult because I wanted to always be a kind and good person and show people good deeds. And I didn't have an ulterior motive. And sometimes it came, I think it came from maybe a Satan place, as something that was really insidious and really evil. Other times I think it was pretty innocent that people would say that they were like, what is she up to? You know, you smile and you're like, well, no, you know, what's she thinking? What's she up to? Especially if it was during negotiations. But I would read this and I think, you know, they're going to accuse me of doing wrong when I'm doing the right things. But we want them to see the good deeds so that they can glorify God on the day he visits us. And I'm not real sure what that day is. If it's the day of judgment, it may be too late for them to glorify God. I think that this is saying, and this is just my opinion after reading it and studying it, that it's on the day that he visits them with salvation. On the day that they come to the realization that they've been living in a sinful way and they want to have God redeem them. And I think the only way that's going to happen is if we persist with those good deeds and we don't let them draw us down. And man, I'll tell you, there were times that it was hard because I'm thinking, man, I can't win for losing. I'd go back to my office and I'd think, for crying out loud, I'm doing these nice things and they're accusing me of evil. And I mean, they would accuse me to my face. There were some of them that would do that. So it was just a really difficult situation to be in. And I think that's kind of what he's talking about, is these people who are, he calls them pagans. You're living among the pagans. That's pretty harsh language. And they're going to twist what you do and what you say regardless, and I think he's telling Christians here to stay the course. Keep doing the good deeds that you were created to do. And I know that your point here really isn't this as much as it is the individual, and then how does the church play into this? And I think, and from other scriptures, I think that the way that the church plays into this is when I come here and I am with my brothers and sisters in Christ, they buoy me up. And they tell me, you're not crazy. You're not completely nuts. You're a little crazy, but not completely nuts. You're, you know, and you're doing the right thing, and it's okay. And hang in there. And they keep, that's what the church does, is they keep us motivated. And we need that body of believers so that we can be this kind of a person. It's hard. It's really hard.
Yeah, it is.
And there are a lot of times in the world, I mean, I don't feel like I face that now that I'm retired and I interact with my neighbors and everything. I don't think that there's, you know, I don't have that same kind of a sense that I did in the workplace because of the type of job that I had, I think, probably more than anything else. But I just really, that it got me down a lot, and I had to turn to the scripture a lot to try to say, okay, just stay the course, because on the day that God visits this person, that they need to be able to glorify God, and they're going to have something to hold on to. And maybe I can provide that. I don't know.
Yeah. Good point. Well, let's go on to the next one, Colossians, the fourth chapter, and verse 5. But let's read 5 and 6.
Walk in wisdom toward them that are without, redeeming the time, that your speech be always of grace, seasoned with salt, that ye may know how ye ought to answer each one.
Okay. Thoughts about this instruction?
Be honest, but try not to be condemning if it's something unpleasant.
Yeah, you can be honest. You can be straightforward and still be gracious about it. Absolutely. He's not, the Apostle Paul would never tell the Colossians, don't tell somebody when they're getting ready to fall off a cliff. But do it with grace.
Now, our society today, here, is so conscious of saying anything even slightly offensive. It's totally wrong. But in other cultures, you just say something flat out, and that's just the way it is. That's the way the culture is.
That's true.
It's hard for us to say the truth without offending somebody.
Well, he's not saying that you have to so live your life that nobody ever gets offended. But you have to live your life so that if they get offended, it's on them. It's not on you. Okay? One of those cultures that's really straightforward is Native culture in Alaska. I mean, they are just as straightforward as they can be. If you're ugly, they're going to walk up to you and say, I'm sorry, you're really ugly.
They won't even say the I'm sorry
part. Yeah, they won't even do that. Yeah, you know, if you bring your baby around them, they're going to look at that baby and say, whoa, that's an ugly baby. They have no filter.
It's just a different filter than ours now. Yeah,
that's a good way to say
it's
it.
Hard to get used to.
Yeah, different filter than ours. Would they walk up and say, you're fat? Well, okay. Yeah, Carol.
Well, salt is a seasoning, and in order to have something flavored just right, you need the right amount. Not too little, not too much, just right. And it's difficult sometimes to find that balance. But we always have to know that God's word is what we need to hang on to.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. If somebody's hurting, salt is not good to pour into the wound. Okay. We talk about salt being a preservative a lot. We talk about how it seasons food a lot. We don't talk about how sometimes people pour salt into wounds. And that's never helped. Let's look at 1 Corinthians 10, 31 down through the end of that chapter.
Whether then you eat or drink or whatever you do, do all to the glory of God. Give no offense either to Jews or to Greeks or to the church of God. Just as I also please all men in all things, not seeking my own profit, but the profit of the many, so that they may be saved.
Okay. Comments here. Yeah, Ted.
Sounds reading Paul writing that and knowing what Paul was going to go through in so many cities, I have to ask, why does he think that he pleased all people in all things?
Well, what would your resolution be?
Find a hard resolve. I haven't been driven out of the city yet. So I know I don't please all people in all things. So I would love some insight on that.
Well, I can offer my version here. It says in verse 33, even as I try to please everybody in every way, for I'm not seeking my own good, but the good of many. So he's trying to please them for their own good, but it's his attempt to do that, and it's not to satisfy his own needs. That's the way I read it because of this particular version.
And that's a better version. I mean,
it just says, even as I try to please everybody in every way. Well, that's the middle of a sentence. Let me start it. Do not cause anyone to stumble, whether Jews or Greeks, for the church of God, even as I try to please everybody in every way, for I am not seeking my own good, but the good of many, so that they may be saved.
And again, that's a, like I said, a better translation where the word try is put in there. And that's appropriate. I'm sure that Paul did try. The New American Standard Version says, I also please everyone. Well, no, Paul didn't please everyone. So I would just consider that that's just a poor translation of what Paul was trying to say.
Yeah, I like that translation. What does the New International translate? Were you reading from the New International?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm reading from, let's see, this is the American Standard Version. The American Standard also says, as I try to please everyone in everything that I do. Yeah.
But I think Kim's right. I think you have to go back to the verse before about not causing someone to stumble. It's not that you're there to please everybody about everything. You're trying to make it whatever you're doing is so that they don't stumble. You're not a stumbling block to somebody. I think that's the point here of his not asserting himself in any way that he could. He doesn't want to be a stumbling block.
Right.
Yeah, and I don't think he's saying that he's willing to compromise the truth to keep you happy, to keep you pleased. What he's trying to do is recognize where you're coming from, the other people are coming from, and try not to put a stumbling block in their way. He's trying to be considerate of the other person, but he's certainly not saying that he's going to compromise to make everybody happy.
Right.
That's kind of, when it says I please everybody. Yeah, you can never please everybody. But you can be considerate of everybody and trying to take their concerns into consideration when you're presenting the gospel to them and trying to help them and assist them to be saved.
Yeah. And so I one of the things that has always been impressed on me is that there's a big difference between offending somebody and causing them to offend. Okay. Sometimes people get offended at they have triggers that are just outrageous. And you can trigger somebody without knowing that you triggered somebody, or you can offend somebody without knowing that you offended somebody. I don't think he's talking about that. He's saying, I will not cause somebody to offend because of what I say. I will not cause them to sin. And he could say, in all honesty, I have never done that. Okay? Yeah, Bill.
Well, what you're saying goes back to that last scripture that we read, redeeming the time. Don't lead anybody astray.
Right.
That's basically what you're saying.
Right. Right. And it's in some ways, it's similar to the instruction that he gives to fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. There is a way to interact with our children where all we do is provoke them to anger.
Yeah, that's true.
Absolutely. And we have to avoid that. Just like we have to avoid causing people to offend. And that takes discretion and it takes some thought. Okay. So the Christian has a relationship with his community. Christian also, I think, has a relationship with business enterprises. And Bill talked about this a little bit before. Let's go back to Colossians, the third chapter, and let's look at verse 22. and read down through the beginning of chapter 4. Somebody want to read that? The first verse of chapter 4.
Slaves, in all things, obey those who are your masters on earth, not with external service as those who merely please man, but with the sincerity of heart, fearing the Lord. Whatever you do, do your work heartily, as for the Lord, rather than for men, knowing that from the Lord you will receive the reward of the inheritance. It is the Lord Christ whom you serve. For he who does wrong will receive the consequences of the wrong which he has done, and that without partiality. And then verse 1 says, Masters, grant to your slaves justice and fairness, knowing that you too have a master in heaven.
Okay. Thoughts? Comments? When he talks about slaves and bondservants and masters, he's really talking about employer-employee relationships, at least today. Now, their employer-employee relationships may have looked a little bit different back then, but they still had employer-employee relationships. Yeah.
They were... Well, the studying we've done before. What we call slaves today, captive servants to them. They were more treated like members of the family as long as they acted that way.
In some cases.
And there were, it speaks of, if you bring up your servant properly, he'll inherit with your children. Or if a servant decides that he loves you and doesn't want to leave, bore a hole through his ear and he's with you forever.
Right.
That was the relationships they had.
Yeah. I think you're right. Understanding master and slave relationships, they've changed over time. And if you are the master, you are never at liberty to mistreat your slave.
They're still human beings.
If you are an employer, you are not at liberty to mistreat your employee.
Or you shouldn't anyway.
Carol.
As an employee, you're not allowed to mistreat your boss either. But the important thing is that Christ and God are your head. So whatever you're doing for them, not necessarily for the person that you're working for or who's working for you, which is why if something is not something that God would be pleased with, you have to change. Either you have to confront them and walk away from the job or,
fired. Whatever. Now, he also says, treat them with respect. Even when he talks about your employer, your master, you even treat those that mistreat you with respect.
Yes.
That's really hard. Yeah, Andrew.
You know, here... We've been kind of talking about it all night, like how to uphold ourselves as Christians. And even last Sunday, just spiritually and then in the community. Here, he's now hitting at how to do it in the workplace, that you still are a Christian even though you're working. You still need to uphold yourself as that. You know, it's actually really, really hit home for me because recently I've been struggling with the whole thought of, you know, when I go off to basic training, when I go off to these trainings, you know, how am I going to get my spiritual food, you know? And I've had many talks with my dad about it, and honestly, this really helps clear it up that, you know, even though I may not have the opportunity to go to services out there or they don't offer the proper services for me, I can still uphold myself as a Christian out there. I can still put the work and the time and the effort into what I'm doing. And, you know, hopefully I can find other like-minded people there where we could do the Sundays. I'll have free time, so I know that I can probably sit down with them and do something. But he's really talking about that just because you're working doesn't mean that you're not a Christian. It means that you should uphold yourself still. You should set that example for others.
That's a good way to say it.
You're really that example for others. Is even when things get tough, even when the job gets tough, when your boss is being hard on you, when customers are yelling at you, other employees are yelling at you, you're not quick to anger.
Good point. Good point. And I've been in employment relationships where I felt like I was being abused. I've been in some relationships where Kim felt like I was being abused because I was working a whole bunch of hours, you know. And I was a graduate student researcher. And the thing is about graduate assistants, you can't fire them, so you have to shoot them. Well, I was supposed to work 20 hours a week. It's just that I counted the 20 a lot differently than my boss counted the 20. And I never did wear the same clothes to school 2 days in a row. But that was because, in part, I had an extra set of clothes at school. So, yeah, you can be abused. You have to continue to be a Christian, even in that relationship. Now, that's not to say you can't say, I don't want to do this anymore. I'm not going to continue to do this. I'll look for a different job. Okay.
Just as some background, I think this is kind of interesting that Paul didn't really talk too much about, he didn't like condemn the master and slave relationship. He acknowledged it. He said that it is what it is. But I think what he's saying is, you know, you can change some things institutionally from within by being a Christian. And I think about that because Onesimus, Tychicus and Onesimus carried this letter to the Colossians. And Onesimus was a slave.
Or a former slave, at least.
Well, I think he was still a slave, but Philemon, his master, lived in Colossae. So he was the one that was carrying this letter, so he might have really known what the content of the letter was. And think about his heart, and for him to be told by the Apostle Paul, stay in this relationship, you're in this relationship, but you can affect change by being the person that God designed you to be and created you to be. And I think I seriously underestimate the influence that I can have as a Christian. If I'm not careful, I can underestimate it. And I can start questioning myself. And I need to understand that a little bit of salt, that seasoning goes a long ways. And that preservative goes a long ways, and we need to season our as he says, season our speech with salt and be the kind of person that can affect change. And it might be incremental change. It's not necessarily going to be this huge transformation that we see all at once. It just may be these little incremental things that pretty soon you see your boss kind of softening a little bit. Or you see the people around you a little softer, a little easier, a little more at ease with you. And I think we've all seen that in our lives from time to time. And I think that might be what he was telling Onesimus here is, you know what? You're not going to be able to fix this entirely, but you can affect change. And by the way, your master is a Christian too. So between the two of you, you can really change this institution.
Right. Now, that does not argue that churches need to be involved in managing business affairs by trying to advocate for the end of slavery or humane work conditions. I don't think that's the point. It's the individual. Yeah, Carol.
Well, just sort of one of these things that, you know, if God had it set up in when God had it set up so that the Jew, the person could go and be a slave and the Jewish person and stuff. And you wonder how come, because that's what the South said. Well, God had it set up so that there were slaves. Slavery must be just fine. And so I thought about that for a long time. And it really seems to me that the reason that God let slavery be here on earth is so that we could see something and realize that our sin makes us a slave to sin. And the comparison between being a slave here on earth and being a slave to sin is what we need to be taking out of this situation, and with slavery, not in this context with the lesson, but it really, you know, I think, well, you know, slavery's not the problem. It's the master that's the problem, or this, you know, but it's the example is that God really wants us to understand that sin is we are masters of nothing if we're a slave to sin.
Yeah, that's really interesting. That's really interesting. I'd have to think about that for a little bit, because in the case where you had a reasonable master and a reasonable slave, and it becomes a mutually beneficial kind of relationship, sin is never that way. By the same token, I'm thinking, well, we're slaves to Christ, so maybe that's the other side of it. I hadn't thought about that, but it's a good comment and something for us to think about and maybe, you know, ponder. Yeah, Kim.
You were talking about the difference in the roles of the individual and the church in this case, and I'm going to get back to what I think that the function of the church is to prepare me, to prepare us as individuals to do what God designed us to do and to interact in business. And so if I'm a slave or if I'm a master, if I'm an employer or an employee, my interaction with the church, with this spiritual side of me and the people that I associate with, will prepare me to be this kind of person. So I keep getting back to that because I think it's so closely intertwined that it's really, really easy to kind of conflate, like we talked about last week. We really can conflate that and say, no, as a church, we need to stand up against slavery, or we need to do this, or we need to get into a business enterprise, or we need to, and I just think that we have to keep our heads around the fact, what is the purpose of the church? And I think that's why we're studying this, right? And so that we know what the purpose of the church is, but the purpose of the church is to prepare me as an individual to go out and do the good work that God has designed me to do.
Right. Right. You can't throw the skip pass.
You can't do the skip pass.
Okay. That won't work. Yeah, Andrew, and we're running out of time. I'm not trying to cut you short, but you get the last comment.
Actually, Kim covered what I was going to say, so.
Okay. Okay. Let's look at just one more passage. 1 Thessalonians, the 4th chapter, starting at, let's see. We'll start in 1 Thessalonians 4 at about verse 10. He says, indeed, that is what you're doing to all the brothers throughout Macedonia, loving the brothers from chapter 4 at verse 9. He says, we urge you, brothers, to do this more and more and to aspire to live quietly, to mind your own affairs, to work with your hands as we instructed you, so that you may walk properly toward outsiders and be dependent on no one. In another place, he says that if you won't work to support your family, you're worse than an infidel. So individual Christians have a responsibility to be gainfully employed. That's a really broad term when I say gainfully employed. You could be a farmer. You don't work for anybody, but work as a farmer to provide for yourself. And I really like the idea that the church's responsibility in this is not to say that we have to somehow change the national policy about welfare. That's not what we're all about. The church is to have a relationship with the individual. The individual is to have a relationship with the economy around them. Okay? Again, we're running out of time. So we'll take up the last two or the last three, if I remember to change my chart. We'll take up the last three aspects of this next week. Anything else that we need to mention before Ted leads us in a song?
Well, basically, do unto others as you would have that went right out of my mind. Do unto others as you have them do unto you.
Yeah, that's true.
Each other.
And there's a passage that I used to quote and put the comma in the wrong place. Let him that stole steal, no more working with his hands. I had said that jokingly with a friend of mine so many times that one time I was saying that in a sermon, and it started out, let him that stole. And I realized, wait a minute, you got the comma in the wrong place. So I had to backtrack and start that all over again.